Federal emergency management teams are on their way to the state. For NPR News, I'm Rupa Shenoy in St. Paul.
The Arkansas Supreme Court rules the state's execution law is unconstitutional. It sided with 10 death row inmates who argued that only the legislature can set execution policy. About 3 years ago, legislators voted to give that power to the Department of Correction. Jurors are spending a second day deliberating testimony in Jerry Sandusky's child sex abuse trial in Pennsylvania. The former Penn State assistant football coach is charged with 48 counts of molesting several children from his former charity for at-risk youth. As jurors began assessing the evidence yesterday, one of Jerry Sandusky's adopted sons alleged that he was abused by his father. I'm Lakshmi Singh, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Park Foundation, dedicated to heightening public awareness of critical issues at parkfoundation.org.
Programs on WILL are made possible by Jim Rue at Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer warranties on many products. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959. 367-8121.
Good morning. Welcome to Hour 2 of Focus, our morning talk show. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Harriet Williamson is the producer, and Kyle Mabry is at the controls. And we're very happy in this hour of the show to have back once again as our guest, Brian Johnson. He's professor of journalism in the College of Media at the U of I. He's a photographer, and for a long time, every once in a while, has been stopping here, and we talk about cameras and taking pictures and always have a lot of fun and answer a lot of questions. And we'll do that in just a second here. This is also the second day of our short end-of-year fundraising effort. And the reason that we're doing it is the almost the end of our fiscal year. So our new fiscal year begins July 1st. And a long time ago, we decided we would raise money ahead of the time that we needed it. So all of the money for next year's programming must be in the bank when we start the fiscal year. That's it. And so we wanted to make sure that we're on a good, solid foundation for next year. We just have a little bit to go here. Last year at this time, we raised over 4 days about $40,000. So we said we wanted to do at least $10,000 a day to match what we had done before. And let's even see if we can do better. So that's what we're doing here. We're raising the money for next year's programs. And so we'd like to reach out to folks who listen. If you're not a supporter of the station, this would be a great time to do it.
This would be a wonderful time for you to become a friend of WILL, become a new friend of WILL by calling this number 217-244-9455. Or maybe it's time for you to renew that contribution. Now's the time to do it if you've been waiting for that last moment. You know what? I guess this is it. This would be it. 217-244-9455. And hey, some good news, David. We are on track towards making our $10,000 today. We are at $7,200, a little bit over $7,200. So let's keep the ball rolling right now with your pledge of support at 217-244-9455 as an incentive for you to make that call today. Our good friends at Krannert have given us a pair of Krannert Center Flex Series tickets for the 2012-2013 season. Five performances, a pair of tickets, and you get to pick the performances. I guess there are some excluded shows, but most I think are in there. You can just pick the theater, dance, music, or family performances that you would like to go to. And we'll be making that drawing later on this afternoon. When you make a call, you don't have to make a contribution, but we hope that you will take the opportunity to do so and show your support for your public radio station. The number is 217-244-9455. And don't forget about Dave's big bad book giveaway.
Dave and Harriet.
Let's not forget Harriet.
Yeah, we, as people know, we have a lot of authors on this show. And so we have a lot of books and we save them and we have a pretty significant library that we put together. Well, we're going out of business, so we're liquidating the library. And what we're doing is we'd like to find homes for some of these books. So if we can use them to encourage folks who are listening to make a contribution. That's what we're doing. We have good books. They're hardcover books. They're recently published, things like history and politics. These people have been on the show. So what we're saying is if you will make a contribution of $40 or more, if you can, we will pull one of these books, select it for you, and in there we'll also put one of the really nice commemorative bookmarks. They're leather. And we had them made to mark the 30th anniversary of the show, which was last year. So we'll send you a book. It'll be something good. We think that you will enjoy it. And we'll put that bookmark in there. And then you can use that forever after and always think of us every time you read.
Sounds great.
All right. Well, that's it for here, for the asking for money thing. But here at this point, I want to say welcome and hello to our guest, Brian Johnson, who's been here before a bunch of times. He's been here on the show a bunch of times. He teaches journalism at the U of I, has been a professional photojournalist, worked for a while for the News Gazette newspaper, and has taught a lot of young people the art of photography. And he's been a regular guest on the show here over time to talk about taking pictures. And we've answered a lot of questions. And if there are folks out there questions, you pick up the telephone and call us. No one's going to expect you to give money. That'd be nice, but it's not required. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. If you got questions, you can call us. Thanks for being here.
Yeah. Glad to be here.
Now that we're in the last days, we're rounding up all our friends. We're dragging them
the
in for one
is
last.
Setting.
Yeah. We're going to ride off. But before we go, we want to see all our friends. So I'm real glad that she could be here. And we probably talk about this every time we do this, or have for a long time. It still sort of amazes me when I think about, you know, how the way most people take pictures has changed over the time that we've been doing this.
Completely
just
changed.
Totally.
Yeah. And what's interesting about the change, you know, we always think about the technology, and people frequently ask with questions about the technology. But what's been interesting about the change in the equipment is it's also led to a change in how people deal with photography and, you know, how they view photography, how they actually take the pictures. And I think that a lot of it's really been to the positive side, that I think people are much freer now when they're shooting. You know, they don't have that feeling like, oh, this is a roll of film and it cost me X amount of dollars and then I have to have it processed. And, you know, then I won't necessarily remember even how I took the picture. So with digital photography, you can shoot, you can see it. And not only can you see it, but then you can think about it and analyze it. Now, you know, one thing we've always talked about here is that it's really important for people to try to think about why they're taking a picture before they take it. You know, if they see something and they're like, wow, I should take a picture of that, then it's like take it to that next step and say, okay, what is there about this that makes me want to take this picture? You know, is it the light? Is it the person? Is it the expression? Now, clearly you can't sit around hemming and hawing about it because the moment's going to be gone. But as you get better at this, you'll see an image and you'll think, wow, I want to shoot that. And you'll kind of know kind of simultaneously what it is about that image that you want to shoot. Why that's important is that then you can take that information about what attracted you to that scene and then be sure that's incorporated in the image you actually produce. Mm-hmm. And I think so often people see someone and say, wow, that's really cool. And they just kind of, you know, pick up a camera and point and snap. With modern cameras, exposure is going to be fine, but that doesn't take into account, you know, composition, you know, what you, you know, might include, not include in the image, your position in relation to the light and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
So with digital, what's so great is that you can, you know, not only see something that's interesting to you, but once you shoot the picture, hopefully you'll take a little bit of time and say, okay, does this accomplish what I wanted it to? Is there anything in the way that I need to move over one way or another to eliminate it? Is the lighting effective? You know, was the exposure what it should have been?
Yeah. This is one of these things, you know, I do all these shows where I talk about stuff I don't know anything about. So in this particular case, I have to admit that just fairly recently I bought for myself my first digital camera.
Awesome.
And I haven't really done very much with it yet. I'm hoping here, because I'll have a little more time, to get on it and do things. And I bought this camera, and it's first of all, it's amazingly sophisticated thing in a tiny package.
Exactly.
So that's really interesting. So I'm going to have to sort of – and it will operate fully automatically. But, of course, then there are ways that you can either specialize settings that they think are optimized for particular kinds of photographs.
Right.
Or you can – it is possible to make it completely manual. You know, set your own exposure, set your – everything. And so I'm just now – no, I got a lot of stuff here to learn. Just beginning with the very thing that you were just talking about, and that is framing the image.
Right. Exactly. And – there are many, many different rules of composition, many different things that you can look for. But one of the ones that I talk about with my students is something called the rule of thirds. Mm-hmm. So if you imagine the viewfinder split up in thirds horizontally, those imaginary lines going through there, that's where you could line up objects within your image. So if it's, you know, if it's the skyline, you could have it on that upper third or on the lower third. Then you also think about having a set of vertical thirds. Same thing. If you have a person, you can line them up, not right in the center, but kind of on the thirds. If you put those two sets of thirds together, so it looks a little bit like a tic-tac-toe grid, mm-hmm. Where those crossing points are, those become kind of optimum points for your subject of interest. So what's so great about the rule of thirds is that when you're looking through the viewfinder, it's easy to visualize, well, in kind of up in up or down in one of the four corners is where I should try to put my subject. Okay, so they're off to the side in some way in this third arrangement. What goes in the rest of the image, right? And that's one of the next things that I talk about with my students is that when they look at something, when humans look at things, we tend to look for the signifiers of our safety, right?
Yes. Right.
So, you know, is there a cliff I'm going to fall off of? Is there a door that I'm going to walk into? Is the person that I'm talking to, do they look angry or happy or friendly? So we do that, but then what we don't do is we don't look around the object or the person. We tend to look right at them and the rest of it sort of blurs out. We have selective vision. So I encourage my students to do what I call eye exercises, really to force their eye all the way around the frame to, you know, look at their subject, get it composed the way they want, but then look beyond the subject to see what's in the rest of the frame. Because even though as a human, we just sort of look at the subject and ignore everything else, the camera doesn't. It's going to photograph everything that's there in front of us. So so using the rule of thirds is a really great, you know, quick way to get some interesting composition. But then it's really that next step, I think, that's almost the most important, looking around the background and everything. So,
well, we're here to answer questions. We can just talk, but if you have questions about taking pictures, about cameras, about technique, Brian Johnson is our guest. He's a professor of journalism in the College of Media and has been taking pictures for a long time. And if you'd like to get some advice, either on hardware or technique, give us a call, 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. So in either case, those are the numbers to use. One of the things that you know, in some of our past conversations I'd always have been wanting to ask you about and never quite got the chance was that, you know, now there's a lot of software available for people to use to manipulate the image.
Right.
Tons of photo apps. It seems like every day there's some new one that allows you to take your picture and then do something to it.
Right.
How do you sort through, or do you have some, well, you probably use Photoshop or something really high end.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is that in general, I like to shoot my images straight ahead and do any adjusting to them after the fact, you know, when I get in and am working on it on the computer. You know, there are some cool apps that let you take the picture and then immediately post it to, you know, your social networking site. There's some that make it look like it was taken with a toy camera. There's some that when you take the picture, it makes the scene look like it was a miniature setup, almost like a little train set that you've taken from a Gulliver's point of view. You know, there are some that do, they make it look, I don't know, I don't want to say hazy necessarily, but all kinds of different, you know, apps like that. One of the apps that I found that's not for, it isn't a in the camera or while you're shooting app. It's one after the fact. It's called Portrait Professional. And it's a cheating application.
Good. I like that.
And, you know, so basically what they've done with the software is they've said, you know, for beauty, these are the kind of things that, you know, the face should look like to enhance the beauty. So the spacing of the eyes, the size of the eyes, the, you know, fullness of the lips, the smoothness of the skin. And, you know, so I kept seeing these ads online for it. And I'm like, okay, you know, what sort of, you know, gimmick is this? And they had sort of before and after pictures. I'm like, okay, you know, they've got it on special. I'm going to try it. And, you know, it's amazingly effective because what's so great about it is that, now just remember, this is not photojournalism. This is cheating, right? This is the kind of cheating that you do within families to make your, you know, make your sister look good and, you know, you know, so what it does is you select a number of points on the person's face, and then it kind of morphs their face into, you know, slightly more attractive or, you know, beautiful look. Now, you'd think, well, then it's not the same person. But to me, that's one of the amazing things about this is that it still looks like the person. And if you were just to look at it first thought, you'd say, oh, yeah, well, that's the person. But then if you see the before and the after, you'd see how it has subtly adjusted them. And it, you know, from the classical, you know, ideas about, you know, beauty, it has sort of enhanced this person's look. Mm-hmm. Really surprising. You know, they have, you know, you tell it whether it's male or female. You know, you set points, you know, for the eye and the iris and, you know, the mouth, whether it's open, closed, and then it does its magic, and it does it pretty quickly, too.
And I imagine if you don't tell people that it does that, they won't.
No.
We really don't know what it is we look like.
Right. No, and that's what I think is so successful about it, is that it really just takes a person and sort of, you know, subtly, you know, adjusts things on their face. And so it really does still look like the person, but, you know. It's cheating. Yeah. It's like you, but better, David.
But better. Hey, thank you very much. And I could use a little improvement. We're starting to get some callers here. Let's talk with some folks here who have questions. I also have a couple emails we'll get. So we'll start out with someone in Bement, line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have some pictures that were taken with in shadow. And I have Adobe Photoshop Elements. Nine, or eight, one of them. And I tried to lighten them up. Is there just a limit to what Photoshop can do, or is there a book that I could get that would tell me how to use Photoshop better?
Sure. You know, something else that I found really useful lately is going on the web, and particularly at a site like YouTube, because there are people that have produced tutorials. So you can see them doing the adjustments right there in the little video.
Okay.
When things are in shadow like that, there are some things that you can do. Instead of just lightening the entire image, a lot of times what you can do is if you can get in and lighten the midtones, there's something that's called levels, and you can adjust the shadows, the highlights, and the mid-tone. So if you can lighten the mid-tone a little bit, that's a good first step. And then the other thing, once you've done that, is you can increase the contrast a little bit. So lightening the mid-tones and then making it a little bit more contrasty sometimes is kind of a real quick secret sauce to improving images that are in shadow.
Okay. But is there a limit to what that can do? Like it
yeah,
may not ever bring...
Well, Yes, there's always a limit, and yes, it'll, you know, your images will look noisier, you know, they'll look more kind of grainy or speckled, but underexposed, when we're talking about digital photography, underexposed or in shadow is better than overexposed, where the highlights are all washed out. So I've always been pretty amazed at how much detail you can pull out of an image, even though it's in shadow. So it isn't going to be like as if it were perfectly lit or perfectly exposed, but it's pretty amazing what you can do.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Well, we have some other callers here. We have some emails. We'll get to you in just a minute, I promise. I want to take a minute, though, here to once again remind you just how vital your support is to this station. The dollars that support the programming have to come from listeners. It's the most important source of support we have, and that's why occasionally we say that in a very deliberate way. We have people who have supported us for a long time, and to them we want to say thanks. They're wonderful, loyal folks. But we also, as time goes along, need to bring new folks in. And that's what we're trying to do here this morning. Les
absolutely,
Schulte,
absolutely, David. And did I hear you correctly? You just bought a digital camera?
I did. Just a few months ago. And I've taken about four pictures.
You know what? They have these devices now that will actually toast your toast. They're called, you know, toasters.
Well,
I've
always been using the open fire method.
Well, that's what I thought.
We go in the backyard, we build a fire, mm-hmm. You stick it on a stick.
Man. You need one of these devices called toasters. Those are terrific.
Now, I never claimed to be an early adopter
Apparently not.
And it is true. I like to size things up for a little while, kind of see how it'll go. Yeah. Don't want it to be some kind of flash in the pan technology where I'm going to go out there and going to buy it, and then suddenly it's going to be outmoded.
Well, you know, David, I think that today's Focus program has been a perfect example of what this show is really all about. First hour, we had a national author on discussing politics. This hour, we have Brian is with us. We're discussing photography, the who, the what, the why, the how. And, you know, this Focus has been a show that has developed experts in all fields and has allowed you, the listener, the opportunity to call and question and get great information, whether you use it or not. Like, apparently David doesn't use it all that much, but I know you do. Call 217-244-9455 or go to willpledge.org and help support this kind of programming on your public radio station. How much should you give? Really, that's up to you. You put a value on this service. Give as much as you can. Don't give any more than you can. Put the value on this service, what it means to you, and then make that call at 217-244-9455 or online at willpledge.org. We had a goal about we wanted to reach $10,000 for the day. Right now we are at almost $7,400, almost $7,400, thanks to you. Make that call. If you call today, we'll put your name in for a drawing to win a pair of Krannert Center Flex Series tickets for the upcoming season, the 2012-2013 season. Five performances. You get to pick the performances you would like to go to. There are a few exclusions, but not very many, and the Krannert will send you all the paperwork on that, and we're going to draw for that pair of Flex tickets later on this afternoon. So get your name in by calling this number, 217-244-9455. You don't have to make a contribution, but we hope that you will take that opportunity to support your public radio station right here before the end of the year. And you make a $40 contribution or more, and Dave and Harriet will give you a book choice.
We'll pull something. It'll be something recent, a good hardcover book. This is nonfiction. It could be politics, could be history, something like that. And then we'll slip in there one of the very handsome bookmarks, leather bookmarks, that our own Heather Miller had made up to honor the fact that the show was on the air 30 years. We had those made up for last year, and they're really very, very nice. They're very handsome. So it'll be something to remember us by as you read beside the fire in the years to come and think about old Dave. The whole thing has been a sham all this time. I don't really know anything. Yeah. The guests know. I don't know anything.
Well, you know, I've always suspected that myself.
And you've been nice enough not to mention it.
Till today.
Until today. Well, now the truth comes out when we're in the last days. Anyway, I hope people will pledge, go online, make a contribution, and help support the
station. I've seen you sit at your desk and just stare at that thing that we call a computer.
That thing. I've always wondered what that was for. We have callers here. Brian Johnson is our guest. He's professor of journalism at the U of I. You have questions about cameras and photography. You can give us a call, 333-9455. Toll-free 800-222-9455. Back to the phones. Belgium is up next. Line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Just before the break there, you were talking, the first caller, or the other caller anyway, you were talking about enhancement programs. And I had a very interesting occurrence happen to me. I was sitting in an airport in Tokyo, and I'm sitting talking to this fella, and he pulls out his pictures. He must have been a very good photographer, but the pictures were phenomenal. And he said, he does it all digitally and everything. And he said, I have one problem with my pictures anymore. And I said, well, what's that? And he says, well, when I take pictures of my wife, I enhance them. His wife was sitting there. She in the picture, she looked like she was 30 years younger. I mean, this guy really did a number on her. She was phenomenal in the pictures. She was nice in real life, but she was phenomenal in these pictures. And he said, I make her look so good now, she won't let me take her picture.
Well, you know, as I say, it's, you know, it's basically cheating. I mean, when we're using, you know, using software. And I think that's some of the trick, though, is that, you know, is that you can make something look, you know, thing, meaning, you know, whether it's a car, whether it's a pet, whether it's, you know, a relative, whatever, you can make it look so perfect that it doesn't look real anymore. And, you know, that's, I mean, you know, we could always do this, you know, in the old days, they would have airbrush artists who would go and literally paint on the photograph so it would look better. Now we can do it, and you know, you're still basically like an airbrush artist, but you're doing it electronically. But yeah, but now there's software that'll do it, you know, really easily. And that's, you know, for that earlier software package that I mentioned, that's one of the things I liked about it, is that it still looked pretty believable. You know, it still really looked like the person, and it didn't really make them look unrealistic. So.
Thank you very much.
That's also, I think, one of the really interesting developments is that, as you say, you could always do this, but it would take, you'd have to have a dark room, you'd have to maybe have sophisticated tools, and you'd have to have a lot of experience.
Exactly.
And now the tools are easier, much easier to use. They're very affordable, and almost anybody, if you're willing to put the time in to learn, kind of learn how to do it,
right.
You can do it.
Right. You know, and certainly someone who knows what they're doing with the software. You know, you still have to have that expertise to do a really great job. But just, David, like you'd mentioned with the camera that you just bought, that's very sophisticated. There's a lot of intelligence built into the camera. And it's the same way with the software. So, you know, it still comes down to, why am I taking this picture? What is it about? Am I successful in bringing that vision to reality? Mm-hmm. And that's the part, it doesn't matter, you know, how much software you have. If you don't have that original vision, you know, you can, you know, do some cheating things and put all kinds of filters over to make it look like something else. But still, it's still the skill and the vision of the photographer that's really the secret of taking good photos.
Let's talk with somebody else. This is Champagne and Line 2. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Well, that beats the other one where on these dating websites where somebody sees in a magazine, you know, this attractive person, they just scan it and put it up, you know.
Right.
That's really true. Actually, this is a little bit, maybe not an area. I have to go in for some dental, you know, x-rays. And what about the old methods of film versus the digital? Would you know, is it comparable or?
You know, There have been some, you know, changes with the technology of how they're going to produce an image. And actually, I was just reading something recently about how they can use lasers to do sort of an MRI type imaging.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was reading about the advantage with the laser is that it can give you much finer detail as you're looking at things. So, you know, certainly with the X-ray technology, I know that they've, you know, done a lot to reduce the exposure to the, you know, radiation when you're having it done.
Which is a plus.
Yeah. And, you know, I think also, again, because it's digital, you know, you can certainly get the image much, much quicker than you could if it was in the film days.
Yeah, I just sort of wonder, because I go back to the days of, and I've called them before, I did professional photography freelance. I had the speed graphic and all that kind of stuff in portraits.
Uh-huh.
You know, processed in the, you know, lab and would see the image come up and everything. But I just sort of wonder whether the, in other words, in terms of bone density, whether they would be similar, I would assume so. You know, film technique versus the digital.
Right, right. And that's, you know, certainly one of the, you know, when it comes to a really technical area like that, you know, or even if you think about, you know, people that have done, you know, intelligence work with surveillance photographs and all of that. I mean, that's, you know, again, it's such a specialized area. And, you know, after years and years of doing it, I'm sure that as they went from film to a digital image that, again, being skilled in it, they could tell what the differences were and then kind of adjust what they needed to as they looked at it. But
yeah, well, it's great having you on the program.
Yeah,
thank you.
Thanks.
Well, thank you. And we'll go on again to the next caller in line. This is someone in Urbana, line 3. Hello.
A comment and then a question, if I may. Enhancement does go back a long way. Back in the 16th century, Henry VIII sent his court painter Hans Holbein to Germany to paint Anne of Cleves.
Right.
And the painting, he quite simply fell in love with it. Unfortunately, Anne didn't quite live up to the image. And Henry was very put out with Holbein.
Right, right, right. Yeah, actually, I had, you know, just a few months ago, I'd watched the full series of The Tudors, and they've dramatized that whole little scene, you know, that whole sequence fairly well. And I think he said that she looked like a Cornwall mare or something like that when he actually saw her.
Actually, after the engagement was broken off, he came to appreciate her wit, but and they remained friends. My question was on density. You mentioned using levels. I've been using curves in GIMP, but I think the terminology is the same in Photoshop.
Yes.
Is there a time when you'd rather use levels, or is there a time when you prefer curves?
You know, it's this... This is a conversation that I have, you know, somewhat regularly. You know, it comes down to a little bit almost like the, you know, Ford or Chevy, you know, or the Canon or Nikon kind of argument where people that love curves absolutely love curves and, you know, feel that they can do a lot more with it. One of the reasons that I've stuck with levels, particularly with my students, is that I think it's a little bit easier to visualize the levels histogram compared to the kind of the S curve of the curve diagram. So really more for that reason, I've stuck with levels just because I think it's a little bit easier to, you know, look at the histogram showing the levels and then look at your image and sort of make a one-to-one comparison. And curves, I think, is just a little bit more abstract. But again, you know, I think you'll see people using both, and proponents of each one, you know, feel that there are very definite positive points to using one or the other.
I like curves particularly for bringing detail out of deep shadow.
Right. Right.
I have used levels, and it works pretty well in most cases. So
yeah.
I just wondered what your rationale was.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, mostly that's just it. You know, a lot of it is, you know, when I'm teaching people to use it, I think they've, they've, you know, latched on to levels a little bit more easily. And, you know, but again, I know lots of people that that use curves and, you know, just really love it and feel like they, as you say, they're able to control some parts of it a little bit more precisely.
All right. Well, I thank you for the call. Let me get in a question. We have a couple of things here on email. Someone would like you to talk a little bit about when and how to use the macro function on a digital camera.
Well, this is something that I do quite often, actually. I'm for quite a lot of my own personal work, I'm shooting things fairly close up. And it's fairly easy answer in this case, because if you're shooting something and you take the picture and it's out of focus because the camera can't focus closely enough, you put the camera in the macro mode and it sort of changes the range of how it's focusing. So then it can focus more easily. So basically, it's as simple as, you know, when you're too close for the camera to focus in its normal range, with a lot of the digital cameras, there'll be an icon that looks like a flower. That'll put it in the macro mode, and you press it in the macro mode, and instead of the camera focusing from, you know, infinity to 3 feet, now it'll focus from, you know, like 1 centimeter to, you know, 3 feet. So it just kind of changes the range.
So that's it. The idea is if you're trying to get real up close to something.
Right. And it's amazingly effective. You know, because with a lot of these cameras, they're shooting with macro when it's kind of in the wider angle setting. So you have a reasonable amount of depth of field. There's a fair amount of the picture, therefore, that looks in focus. And it's incredible. You know, you can just get almost so that the front of your lens is almost touching the object that you're shooting.
Okay. Also, someone here would like to have you talk a little bit about the concept of white balance and its importance to having the light in pictures look bright and natural.
Right. So this is something that a lot of people don't really know about or think about, that when their camera is taking a picture, it's analyzing the light and adjusting it so that the colors come out natural looking, I guess. I had taken some pictures of you, David, when I first started, and my camera's white balance was set for overcast day light. And because we have tungsten light in this room, it gave the image a very, very yellow look. So what I did is I set the white balance to the tungsten setting, and then the colors looked normal again. Most of the cameras in their kind of normal mode or automatic mode are set up for automatic white balance. So it kind of analyzes the scene and adjusts the colors so that it looks normal. You can do that manually, which is frequently what I do, because if I'm going to shoot a whole bunch of pictures in here of you, I'll set it on the tungsten setting, and then all the images I shoot in here will have that same color balance. When it's on auto, if it catches, you know, like there's a blue waste recycling basket, if it caught some of that, it would say, well, there's a lot of blue light in this scene, so I'm going to adjust it to counteract that. The other thing with this is that cameras that are maybe a little bit more for the serious amateur up to the professionals, you can shoot in a mode that's called RAW. And the way RAW works is that your imaging sensor really records all those different colors. And then when you choose a white balance, it sort of shifts, okay, well, I'm going to use this middle section, you know, that cuts out some of that yellow light from the tungsten. When you shoot in RAW, it records just all the information that's coming from the chip, so that instead of choosing a white balance as you're shooting, you can then, when you're adjusting the image later, you can choose which, you know, where on the spectrum you're going to choose that white balance. So a lot of professionals shoot in RAW because then they can really get the white balance the way they want it after the fact. The automatic white balance does a really great job in general, but it doesn't take that much to manually set it. It just gives you color that's going to be consistent.
Okay. We're coming into about our last 15 minutes on the program here. Again, we have more calls, emails. We'll get to them in just a second. We also, again, would like to remind you about support for the station. Les Schulte is here with me. He's our corporate support director. We do have a lot of businesses that support the station. And
we know.
If there was somebody who was interested in talking about that, they could do that.
They certainly can. We have over 200 businesses that support the station. Some just make contributions during times like these to in the name of their business for $50, $100, $500. Others, of course, are underwriters of different programs that we have on the station. If you own or manage a business and would like to do that, you can call this number too, 217-244-9455. Or if you're just, you know, someone who just likes listening to this program and have found it valuable for you throughout this past year and you want to, you know, do something to make sure that programs like this will continue for another year, why don't you call that number and make a contribution at 217-244-9455 or go online to willpledge.org. Do your part today because we are getting dangerously close to going over that $8,000 mark towards our goal of $10,000 for the day. So every call, every pledge, and every contribution makes a difference. And to encourage you to do that, our friends at Krannert have given us a pair of Flex Series tickets for the 2012-2013 season. Five performances. You get to choose which performances you would like to go to. And we have a pair of tickets. We'll do a drawing for those later on this afternoon. When you call, we will get your name in for the drawing. You don't have to make a contribution, but we hope that you will take the opportunity to do so. I was told that five pair of tickets is 10 tickets. I guess I didn't realize that.
Uh-huh.
For those of you who are maybe a little math deprived, that's 10 tickets.
Yeah, and you're giving me a hard time.
Yeah, okay. I guess that's true. 217-244-9455 or willpledge.org. But I have owned a digital camera for a number of years now, by the way. And David, why don't you tell them about your special incentive for those that make a contribution of 40 or more.
We love books. We love writers and we love reading. And we have a lot of good books here and we're trying to use them as a pledge incentive. So if folks will call, go online, make a contribution at the $40 level or above, we'll pick a recent book from our shelf. This will be something that was featured on the show, a good recent hardcover book, something nonfiction we think you will enjoy. So we'll send that along to you with our thanks. And in there, we'll put one of our fine leather bookmarks that we had made to mark the 30th anniversary of the show, which was last year. So, and it's really nice. I think you will enjoy having that. So again, if you can do that, $40 or better, with our thanks, we'll send you a book. We now need to get back here to the phones and to the emails. We have about 10 minutes left here with Brian Johnson. He's professor of journalism at the U of I and the College of Media. And every once in a while he's here, we talk about photography. Questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Another Bement caller here, line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
First quick comment, I do listen to your show all the time and am a member of WILL. Anyway, one thing you mentioned, and it's a big loss from the old photography days, was black and white. Everybody thinks everything has to be in color, and it really does a lot of dramatic impact is lost. I'm not doing black and white, and I've been working as a photographer on and off for better part of 45 years, and I really miss the black and white days. Also, most light meters are calibrated to a 18% gray, and if somebody wants to really check both your camera or whatever, aim at about the 2 o'clock position on a clear blue sky, and then see what you get, and then check that against, say, Photoshop and stuff, and you should be about right. I'll listen off air. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. Well,
you know, one of the things about black and white, and the caller is exactly right about that, that black and white can really be used for great effect if you have an image that has, you know, beautiful tonality in it, or if there are shapes you want to highlight or whatever. One thing that's neat about black and white that's happened lately is that some of the printers, you can actually get them. You can buy sets of ink for inkjet printers so that instead of just having black ink, it'll have, you know, various shades of gray so that when you're printing the image, it's not just printing black and various sizes of dots, but it's actually using, you know, light gray, you know, medium light gray, dark medium gray, and then dark gray, and then black, so that it's giving you a nice, really rich, full tonal range image.
Now, there are plenty of photo apps that will allow you to take a color photograph and make it black and white.
Right, and in fact, with my students, and, you know, I guess I really said the same thing earlier on, I'll shoot almost everything, I'll shoot everything in color, and then I can always make it black and white when I'm working with it in Photoshop. If you don't shoot it in color, if you shoot it in black and white, it's only going to be black and white. What's neat about shooting it in color as well is that you can work with the saturation of the image. So if you put the saturation very, very low, it almost looks like it's kind of been a hand-tinted photo because it doesn't have the, you know, bright full color of the image, but it sort of greatly mutes all those colors. Mm-hmm. You can go the other way where you can bump up the saturation and make it look almost surreal because the colors are so saturated and rich.
Yeah. Well, other questions, welcome, and we have time for one or two. Give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Have another email here from someone who says, like me, they're trying to explore all of the options of their digital camera. Wonder what would be the best local or maybe online options for in-depth learning to use the manual controls and whether there were any workshops in our region that you might recommend.
Yeah. You know, Daryl Holman from the News Gazette, he was running some workshops at the public library. So if you look in the News Gazette to see what kind of workshops he might be running. I think he's also taking a trip to the Panama Canal, kind of a photo excursion that he's, you know, signing people up for. Urbana Adult Education in the past has always had photo courses that are sort of, you know, for 6 weeks, you know, every Wednesday or something. I know Parkland College has some. The Park District from time to time has some as well. But as I say, if you go online and go to YouTube, that's a really great resource for a whole variety of different shooting techniques and software techniques. There are also, if you're looking to learn about software, there are sites online like lynda.com where they have tutorials on using the software. And I don't know if this, if I can call it an underused resource, but I think a lot of times people don't think of it. If you go to the software developer site, so if you go to adobe.com, a lot of times they'll have, you know, instructional tutorials and, you know, helpful tips and things like that. Yeah. So
I just have a minor gripe with the camera company, and that is that they do not give you a full manual. It's online and you can go there and you can look at it, and that's well. And I guess if you could request a paper copy. Even not for money. They
won't
maybe
for money.
Well,
yeah.
I'm not saying that, but I'm saying that, like, if I was willing to pay for it, could you get a manual?
You know, something that they've done is with some of the cameras, they actually include the manual on a little memory card that they include. Mm-hmm. Something that I know Canon has done, I'm sure the other manufacturers have done it as well, is that they have little explanatory tips about what the different tools do and the different settings. And I found that to be really, really useful, that if you go to into the menu structure and, you know, you go to something like flash control, there'll be a little sentence down below that tells you, you know, this is so you can adjust, you know, the relative exposure of the flash to the ambient exposure, for instance. So, but yeah, it's true. But on the flip side of that, I have piles of manuals, you know, because if I get, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 cameras, and the truth is they're not used that much. Yeah. And so it's only people that toast by the fire that really want a paper.
Hey, you know, okay.
You're gonna have so much more toast when you retire because you'll have time to make the fire and...
People will be stopping over for toast. They'll be knocking on my front door.
You know, you could have a toast booth on the roadside.
That would be something for my retirement.
Yeah, see?
And actually, yes, and I already have a name for it. I'm going to call it Dave's House of Toast.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
It's going to be completely made of toast.
Oh, cool.
So we're almost at the point where we have to finish up. There are so many things that we could talk about. I guess one of the things that, Les and I were actually talking about this earlier, about how many pictures are taken now because people have digital cameras and how few of them are ever printed.
Right.
I wonder, you know, are people just not going to print stuff
right
at all?
Well, but let's look at it from this other angle, though. Think about all the pictures that were printed when we had film that are in a drawer somewhere and never get looked at.
Exactly,
yeah.
What he said.
So, you know, actually that's, again, I think one of the beauties of digital imaging is that it's easier to find... No, I'm going to add something to that. It's easier to get to the image if you have it and it was digital. To find the image, there's something we haven't talked about at all, but there's something called metadata. And something that a lot of people don't know, but when they take a picture, the camera's recording a bunch of information. I guess it's hidden. You know, you have to, like in Photoshop, you could go to the file menu and go to information, and it'll show you information about how the picture was taken, exposure, where the flash went off, etc. There are spots where you can type in keywords. So if I, you know, was doing that for the pictures I shot of you, I would type in keywords like WILL, Focus 580, you know, David Inge, you know, radio host, so that if I was looking for a photo, I'd be like, oh, you know, I don't remember that guy's name since he retired so long ago, but I'll, you know, he's a radio host, so I could type in radio host and then find it. Because that's the biggest problem is so much, almost more than they're not printed, but that you have them and you can't find them or it takes so long. So if you can get in the habit of putting in that information. One really quick thing with that, though, is that with a lot of the smartphones that have GPS built in, it's recording where that image was taken. So you want to think about that if you're taking pictures of your, you know, children, your nieces, nephews, your really expensive, you know, crystal vase that you bought in Poland when you were visiting your relatives or whatever, that, you know, if you're shooting with a camera that's recording that information, if someone goes online and if, you know, the way the photo is stored saves that metadata, they can say, wow, what a beautiful vase. And, oh, look, here, I can pinpoint it
no, just
right
where
here.
It is.
Yeah, yeah. Or, you know, so it is something to really be thinking about is that there is this information that goes along with the images, and a lot of times it's saved with it.
Okay. Well, we got to go. Hey, thanks very much.
Yeah, glad to be
so
here.
Many hours of entertainment for
no,
us.
No, thank you for inviting me all these years.
Brian Johnson, he's professor of journalism here at the U of I and College of Media. We're almost at the point we have to finish. Let's do this real quick.
WILL programs are made possible with support from the Great Impasta, a family-owned restaurant serving foods from northern Italy for more than 25 years. The Great Impasta, Lincoln Square in downtown Urbana. More information is available at 359-7377. Open 7 days a week for lunch and dinner.
Okay, so there's an example of a business that supports WILL.
Absolutely, and we thank them, and we thank you for making your pledge of support for the thousands of people who have made contributions this past year. If you have not yet made yours, and you're one of those, I've been thinking about it, I'll get around to it someday, well, you know what? I think today might be the day as we are winding up our fiscal year. Why don't you give us a call at 217-244-9455 or go online to willpledge.org and make a contribution in the amount that fits into your budget and the amount that you value this service, and let us know that you are helping support programs, for another year as we start our new year on July the 1st. The money we have in the bank on June 30th, that's going to be the funds we'll have to spend on programs and services for you next year for programs like Focus. 217-244-9455 or online at willpledge.org. And David?
That's it.
Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you. And we'll need to make way for the afternoon magazine news and other things for you for the next hour. Craig Cohen is your host.
Thank you. Thank you very much, David. And let's take a look at what's happening on the commodity markets at this hour. We'll start with Kansas City wheat for July at $6.98 and a quarter. That's up 15 and a quarter. And July wheat for Chicago is at $6.82 and a quarter, up 20 and one half. July corn's at $5.95 and a half, make that $5.95 and three quarters, up 9 and a quarter. September corn's at $5.57, up 6 and three quarters. July beans at $14.53 and a half,